Blog Talk Radio.
With Grey Eyes Smith and Captain B2. Although Bobby, aka Captain B2, is not feeling well tonight, so I will be co-hosting with Louie Wilddove, and she will be calling in as soon as possible. She's on the phone with her mother. But yeah, so tonight's show is based on a contest that Captain B2 ran called Too Much of a Good Thing. The Eternal Absurdity of Michael Chabal, Part 3. And so that'll be the gist of tonight's show. And, yeah, I hope we have a good time. All right, so I'm going to grab the first poem here, and I'll post that to the group. All righty, this is by Ben Hart, and it is called Irrelevance of Sanity Beneath the Skin by Ben Hart. 1. This is love, she says, but I don't feel anything. I only bleed beneath the skin. I only feel the expansion of dim within. So I don't need your love. It withers, and you're already killing it. 2. I wonder if the people in the photographs have a metallic taste on monochrome tongues, or if they all they taste is time, the red of their eyes, and the selves they will outlive. I wonder. 3. Ballerina. Don't get it twisted. This is beauty, unforgiving. And yes, you may spin until the ceilings circle on their own and the audience haunt you, even when you're home. Don't breathe. Don't breathe. It betrays your humanity. This is beauty, the irrelevance of sanity. Make them love you so someone loves you. upon the collapse of black swans blue. When the smile arises and the bleak is slain, that was beautiful. Now do it again. Sleep in a pill. She has one for smiling too. I just drink, smoke, and sing a blues. She feels happiest dancing to a dead man's tunes. I don't harbor happiness. All I know is the pursuit. Daydreams of Peter. She knows what she has to lose. And here, I never thought I'd beat her to the noose. 5. You don't know how golden you are, but darling, it must have been something like you that inspired autumn once. 6. I suppose world's end never invaded the Herculean mind of dreamers chasing lanterns of love through mirrored Netherlands, at least not until the blinding, not until pulled from thought, not until thrown to the burning, not until returned to you. 7. You chase me through time into Babel, through Skyfall, and its subsequent dance with master gravity. The wolf, the keeper of a dream, the cut of the keel, the cold of your halo, the silk bullet. You hunt me. Ever since Eden burned down on a clear night, and those flames since reside in your eyes. But all I did, my dear, was lay kindling in the brush. I know. I should have contemplated the cost. You were my loss, and now you haunt me. Siren on the rock, feast of the pieces of me that you pulled from the body. But I'll never let you kill the dream, because that last seed of Eden, I have to cast it into the deep. I have to make good on my mistakes, and I will not let that last piece of you die with me. 8. Summertime sunsets, broken valleys of distant cities in the deep, like human coral reefs. You say you cannot breathe when the sky is pink and bleeding. I say this is a dream, because you look so in love with me. It must be a nightmare. We're both in a meeting of the skin, a blue blanket. I am glad. I am so glad that this moment exists only for you and me. 9. Birthmarks. God's way of knowing who we were born to be, though I wonder how he sees those two little dots on my left pinky from afar. Tattoos, our way of showing God of who we really are, though I wonder how he sees that crucifix on my middle finger in the dark. 10. I can see it in their eyes, the dream of being yours. It even haunts my reflection, my heart, my mind, my soul, my all. This isn't falling in love. This is romantic suicide. End of poem. Wow.
Good read, Ray.
Thank you. Hello, Liu, and welcome to the show.
Thank you.
What do you think of Ben's poem?
You know, this is very dramatic. It's deeply painful. And, you know, when you love somebody, you know, and, you know, like he brings out, but I don't feel anything. I only believe beneath the skin. I only feel the expansion of dim within. You know, the darkness that that person makes you feel, you know, like an abyss, you know, where, you know, so I don't need your love. It withers and you're already killing it. When somebody just continues to destroy the person that you are, and then you stop believing in yourself, and then, of course, depression sets in. You know, he talks about, you know, her beauty. And, you know, he says, don't breathe, because some people like to be seen. It betrays your humanity, this is beauty, their relevance, sanity. Make them love you. So if someone loves you upon the collapse of the black swan's blue, when the smile arises and the breeze is saying that was beautiful, not beat again. You know, just watching somebody, you know, wanting to show themselves, and however it is, whether she's a ballerina or an actress or somebody just that wants attention, that butterfly that just cannot be satisfied with the nectar of one flower. That's why they just jump from flower to flower. You know, and I don't know if she is, his metaphors, if she is taking some type of drugs, you know, that he says sleep in a pill. She has one for smiling too. Who knows what that is? Crack, ecstasy. And he says, I just drink and smoke and sing the blues. That's how he deals with his depression. But she deals with it in a different way. But in some way, you know, he loves her. You don't know how golden you are, but darling. See, there's the word of endearment. It must have been something in an inspired autumn once. The things that he remembers, you know, the good times. But in the end, he specifically says what the relationship is. I can see it in your eyes. The dream of being yours. You know, that is so painful. It even haunts my reflection, my heart, my mind, my soul, my all. To watch the person you love somebody else that really doesn't love them, but they throw themselves in their arms. And then he says in his couplet, this isn't falling in love. This is romantic suicide. Oh, man, just deeply, deeply powerful and emotive.
Yeah, you know, I think this is one of my favorite writes from him, quite honestly. I mean, it has this usual length in it, but it's so steeped in imagery and metaphor. It's so rich in texture and appeal that, you know, like I really enjoyed paragraph two where it says, I wonder if the people in the photographs have a metallic taste on monochrome tongues, or if all they taste is time, the red of their eyes and the cells they will outlive, I wonder. You know, like that's powerful. You know, when you're thinking of people as photographs and they exist in that, and how do they see themselves in that picture? And, you know, and then on paragraph four, they're sleep in a pill. She has one for smiling too. I just drink and smoke and sing the blues. She feels happiest dancing to a dead man's tunes. I don't harbor happiness. All I know is the pursuit. Daydreams of Peter. She knows what she has to lose. And here I never thought I'd beat her to the noose. Wow. I mean, that's just rich in metaphor and steeped in meaning. It's such a deep, deep poem throughout. You know, the whole thing is just evoking such emotion and imagery that it's palpable for sure. Wow. Great job, Ben. Thank you for sharing. All right. I'm going to grab the next poem after I give him a heads up in the group. All right. Okay, so I'm posting the next one here. There we go. Oh. And it's just you and I, so I guess it's your turn to read.
Okay. Forgotten Ian by Selena. Where is that lost world where innocence and purity reigned supreme? Drown now in the corruption of human spirit. Immortality, exquisite Eden, tainted with turpitude and insincerity of heart. No longer a sanctuary of peace, but a realm of harsh reality. Once unspoilt nature, Mother Earth's pride and joy, crystalline streams, majestic mountains, lush, verdant trees, all shone with vibrant hues and breathtaking abundance, where fresh, sweet air could be sipped from the breeze. Yet mother's breath is fading, eyes cloudy, brimming with tears for her beloved children whose indifference and greed ravage her beauty, turning away selfishly from her unique, tender embrace. For towards her creation, they have disregarded their duty. Too late is heard the toll of the warning bell as extinction and destruction sweep across her shores until all have perished through Edith's appetites, feasting upon poverty, abuse, neglect, and more. The world was a gift of unparalleled proportions, where all could be found to sustain and heal, paradise of fleeting wonders, most going or long gone, through dire acts of those determined its fate to seal. In poem.
Beautiful, really. And that's such a powerful poem speaking to this modern situation of man and, you know, all he has become and done against Mother Nature, you know, the crimes against Mother Nature and man's own climb to be the top of the chain. And it's, you know, it's hard to, you know, it's palpable. This is based on Prompt 20, On the Edge of Eternity, and it shows a woman teaching a young girl, I'm not too sure what, but, you know, she looks like she's giving her a gift of knowledge of some sort. And you can see the Adam and Eve in the garden in the background as well. And it's definitely a hard-hitting emotional, right? You know, it really strikes home with me. The damage that's been done, you know, to our earth by man's greed and his insatiable appetite for God. And yet mother's breath is fading, eyes cloudy, brimming with tears for her beloved children whose indifference and greed ravage her beauty, turning away selfishly from her unique, tender embrace, for towards her creation they have disregarded their duty. And then too late is heard the toll of the warning bell as extinction and destruction sweep across her shores until all have perished through audacious appetites, feasting upon poverty, abuse, neglect, and war. I mean, you know, she really nails modern life on the head here. I'm going to quote Arcana Amor's comment here. He says, "What a wonderful piece you have penned here, Stelina. The poetic eloquence of your word choices are simply sublime and divine. I like the poetic way with which you deliver this powerful message about the necessity to care for and preserve our beautiful planet, which shines like a gleaming sapphire in the pitch of the void." And, a beautiful poem, you know, I mean, it really hits hard and smacks you in your face as a man. And, you know, you really feel the hurt that Mother Earth feels. So it's just a very tragic tribute to man and his modern situation. So, well, and what did you think, Lee?
Well, you know, I was looking at the picture that she has here. And, you know, the original promise from the Creator was for man to care and take care of the earth. But there's dry roots and dry limbs encircling the forgotten Eden, where modern man, you know, you look to the past, what was promised, you know, the beauty that was given to them. But we can just see in that dryness with, you know, we could say people through the different ages of time have forgotten that promise to care for Mother Earth, you know, where fresh, sweet air could be sipped from the breeze. And then she talks about what's happening. Mother's breath is fading, eyes clouding, brimming with tears for her beloved children whose indifference and greed ravage her beauty. They have not forgot their selfishness. You know, we see this today where they're talking about global warming, which I just heard a report today about, you know, the destruction of the environment by man, you know, and she does say they feel indifferent. And it says that, you know, and then so she says this is, you know, her last sentence. For towards her creation, they have disregarded their duty. And then here, this is the warning. Too late is heard the toll of the warning bell. Extinction and destruction sweep across her shores. And, you know, and that is there. We have seen in science the extinction of animals that no longer live, that had lived here since their time of creation. They've murdered them. They've destroyed their habitats. And she brings this out. And, you know, and she says, through dire acts of those determined, it's fate to seal. So they have sealed their own fate. We are sealing our own fate by destroying Mother Earth. This was a fantastic poem by Stelina.
I agree. Beautiful comment, Leah. Okay, I've got the next poem posted. I've skipped ahead a few, Leah, just so you know, because it's a guy's poem. So I'm going to read this one. It's called Treasure Hunt by Omar the Alchemist. Behind the gray cloud, beneath the green shroud, behind the closed lid, beneath the orange and red, behind the feather, behind the skin, visible if it's thin, I search for blue. End poem. And that's based on prompt 17 in the contest, which is a woman who seems to be looking into your eyes as you look into the picture. But, you know, she's got a blue sea as a cape with a ship in the background and a moon behind the ship. And but what did you think of the right, Leah?
It sounded like you didn't finish commenting.
No, I know. I'm not.
Well,
I just. I'm going
to
comment.
You know, it to me, you know, this is actually a stunning, stunning image. Her cape is the sea that she's carrying as there's a ship. And it looks like she came out of the water. And she's in some type of castle or some type of sanctuary where into the building, the stones, there's a carving of a fruit basket with fruit that she's holding. And, you know, I don't know exactly, because there's a beautiful carving on the stone walls, that she's admiring the artwork of man, you know, being some type of possible princess of the sea, according to what her dressing looks like. And she's admiring, at least to me, the stone images. And he catches that, you know, he says, you know, beneath the green shroud, which is the water cape, and, you know, beneath the orange and red, behind the feather, which I really like that imagery. And she says that she's searching for blue. So I, you know, it's just excellent imagery. And I enjoyed this brevity. by Omar. Nice to be read, Gray.
Thank you, Liu. And, yeah, you know, I agree with your definition of the poem. Searching for the blue, I think, is within oneself, you know, trying to find that blue sky within ourselves to lift ourselves up into, you know, and fly away to inspire ourselves with and take flight in. So that's what I got out of it anyway. All right, I'm going to grab another poem here. And this is by Jenny the Deep, if you wouldn't mind reading this, please, Leah.
Okay, it's not coming up. Just a minute. Let me refresh.
Yeah, one second.
No, it's... Well, I can't read it, dude, if you don't post it.
Posted.
Okay, I'll do my best because I'm coughing. The Haunting Bride by Jenny the Deep. Feeling faceless in this crowded place, she fought against the winds of change, letting the knife penetrate her skin. Never will anyone hurt her again. Ashamed, fallen from grace, she bleeds until meeting her grave, only to be reincarnated into a dying tree. Fickle is fate, puzzling as can be, always enduring what life brings. She suffered through all of its strings. One on a branch, her silky white wedding dress is flaunted as her sobs echo in the wind. Her lover is haunted. On her wedding day, lost was the most valuable treasure, betrayed by death. Nothing else will ever measure.
Beautiful read. And that's a pretty haunting write by Jenny the Deep. You know, you can feel her her pain, you know, as you read that first sentence. I mean, the first stanza. Feeling faceless in this crowded place, she fought against the winds of change, letting the knife penetrate her skin. Never will anyone hurt her again. To me, that reads like suicide, but I could be wrong. Ashamed, fallen from grace, she bleeds until meeting her grave, only to be reincarnated into a dying tree. Fickle is puzzling as can be. And it doesn't say what... Oh, yeah, it says prompt number 37.
37.
So...
I think it's the same picture. Oh, wait.
Look at
that. No, the tree of reincarnation.
Sorry.
That's what she did it on.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
You know.
Yeah. She did a beautiful job capturing the essence of that picture, quite honestly. I mean, when you look into the background, you can see this in the skyline. Her life, quite honestly. Sorry, I'm just getting back to that picture now. Shows a woman who's being wrapped up by roots or trees, tree roots or vines, and being encased in this roots or vines. And you can feel the pain in this, right? It's definitely an excellent write, and you did a beautiful job of reading it. But I really enjoyed it. On her wedding day, lost was a most valuable treasure. Betrayed by death, nothing else will ever measure. And, haunting for sure. Powerful read and powerful write. What are your thoughts, Leah?
Yeah, I was looking at the picture and then her storytelling of what she thought You know, to me, this woman has been absorbed by nature, the tree, and her dress is caught onto part of the tree, which you can see it underneath there. And behind her in the sky, to me, it was what her life wanted to be, what was supposed to be. I don't know if this young woman, she says that a lover is met with regret as his bride dies caused by his betrayal. So it sounds like to me that she possibly committed suicide, you know, because he betrayed her. And, you know, she was absorbed by and became part of the tree, part of nature. She says only to be reincarnated into a dying tree. You know, fickle is fate, puzzling as it can be, you know, and she, you know, you can see that the tree has no, it's just, it's dead. The tree absorbed her. And then she says, always enduring what life brings, she suffered through all of its strings, you know, the pain that she went through with the betrayal. And then she talks about this beautiful satin pearled emerald dress in this, and the image she wrote for. And she says that on the tree, her, as her sobs echo in the winds, her lover is haunted. And, you know, some, you know, maybe he feels guilt for the things that he did to her, which is probably part of that blue sky image that, you know, we're seeing her past life and his life to this day. And she says that on her wedding day, lost was a most valuable treasure. And, you know, that's love. That is love. And she was betrayed by death. Nothing else will ever measure, because it won't. Wonderful rhyme. Excellent storytelling. You know, this was deeply painful. And I enjoyed how you wove this into a story of love and betrayal, Jenny.
Absolutely. Great comment, Lee. Thank you. All right, I posted the next link, and most of these are female writers, so I'm going to go ahead and just read this. Mm-hmm. This is by Princess Jean. It's called The Good Witch. She's that good witch that gets led astray from time to time. Her motives are so-called good. She intends to mold you into her perfect whim. She intrigues you with her good wine. She lulls sleep instead of rum. Run. Her fruits of her lips are blessing and curses. How can one be so wicked and godly? You have heard of her well. Hamlet, Hillary, and Jezebel, or that busybody in your town. End poem. And what are your thoughts, Leah?
Well, you know, this is another brevity where, you know, she talks about the different struggles that this good witch is going through. You know, she's, you know, that she's good, but, you know, she goes astray at times, you know, and how is she molding you? Is she molding you to the good or to the evil? You know, what she wants into her perfect whim. And then it talks about how she gets them this way, which I'll let you to talk about. And you know, her ending stanza, have you heard of her well, Harriet, Hillary, and Jezebel, or that busybody in your town? So she uses these people's names who we're familiar with and, you know, tries to say, how do you know this is not the good witch, or is it the person that she's created for good or bad? So, you know, this was fascinating and interesting.
Absolutely. Great comment, Lee. You know, I enjoyed it. I liked the good witch in quotation marks, and the good being in quotation, you know, it really makes you wonder if it is good, because, you know, she intrigues you with her good wine and lulls sleep instead of run. Her fruits of her lips are blessings and curses. How can one be so wicked and godly? You know, when somebody has that much power to both take you down and lift you up at the same time, that's a powerful and deceptive thing. So excellent, right? And it was a pleasure to read it. So thank you for sharing, Princess Redeemed. All right, I'm going to grab the next poem here. Posting it to the group. Do, 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 do. All right. So we have My Emotion by Freedom M.D. Richter. If you wouldn't mind giving that a read, please, Leah.
Mm-hmm. My Emotion by Freedom M.D. Richter. My lovely little thing, so petite. Upon the floor, the child asks for a magnifying glass and peers long at what I deplore. My lovely little thing, with tensions in its tendons, poised to strike, deployed in fright, armed like a fearful garrison. My lovely little thing, and jeweled with its duality, afore it goes afoul, it shall go afoot, striding strong towards destiny. Lovely little me, the hellebore, wave swept like an albacore. But what am I? What do I implore? My lovely little thing, what does it typify? Is it the missing golden link? Am I love? Or who am I? End poem.
Beautiful read, Leah. Well, you know, there's so many fabulous rates coming up this this contest. Excuse me. you know, it's it really, you know, goes with the picture well. The picture is a man holding his son in a knight's armor, and the daughter looking up at the both of them, standing below with a wand of sorts in her hand, or a flag. It looks like a flag. But with this epic war scene going on behind them, on painted on the wall, and you can feel the tension in the picture between, you know, the little boy, the girl, and the adult. But my lovely little thing in a duel with its duality, afore it goes foul, it shall go afoot, striding strong towards destiny. I think that, you know, that really captures all of us. I mean, you know, before it goes afoul, it shall go afoot. You know, before we can run, we have to learn to walk. And, you know, we can get ourselves in a lot of messes along the way. And as we stride towards, strong towards our destiny, you know, it's definitely fabulous, right, with incredible imagery. And I like the connotation of, is it the missing golden link? Am I love? Or who am I? Really leaves you pondering the question asked. So what are your thoughts, Leah?
Well, when I looked at the picture you were describing, the man that is holding the child has this questioning look on his face, and it's white. So I don't think that this is their father. It could be a possible caretaker. It could be, you know, anybody in the kingdom that was allowed to watch these child, because, you know, he keeps saying, my lovely little thing, you know, and he, you know, he says, so petite upon the floor, and he's talking about that little girl. The child asks for a magnifying glass and peers long at what I implore. So he doesn't want to be there taking care of the children because, you know, that is quite obvious. And then, you know, he says with tension in its tendons poised to strike, you know, I'm not sure, you know, that he just doesn't want to be there and he wants to strike out at having these children, or he is thinking he has been sent there to do something to the children. This is what's so fascinating about this poem because it puts different thoughts and different emotions in it. You know, it says, you know, that of course that they're striding strong towards destiny because that is what the children are raised to do, to take over the kingdoms and governments. And then it says, you know, but what am I? What do I implore? Who am I? You know, so here I am raising you. I'm just, you know, what is it? What is it? Who am I? And, you know, in this kingdom that, you know, that I see my lovely little thing, what does it typify? Is this the missing golden link? Am I love or who am I? You know, so, you know, he's questioning, you know, because obviously the children love him because you can see he's, you know, he's beholding one and the other one is looking up at him admiringly. But, you know, he's questioning is he love or who he is, you know, and this is what makes this a fascinating picture. Excellent rhyme. And, you know, obviously there is some type of emotional pain going on here. Excellent, right?
Excellent comment, Lee. Great comment. Thank you. Okay, so I've got the next poem up. This is called The Everlasting Breeze of Nostalgia by Jesna Sajan. And I will give this a read. Intro. Touch me with the breeze of nostalgia, old feelings in a new space. Verse 1. Gold and silver are stored in the shelves of time. Materialism and wants are increasing crimes. Chorus. In a new space, I've been kissed by nostalgia, alone to memories of my timeless life. Verse 2. Welcome to my world. I could not record in time. Wish I could for once rewind in time. Chorus. In a new space, I've been kissed by nostalgia, alone to memories of my timeless life. Verse 3. In this new space, in the city light, I've been cornered to the skyscrapers and night highs. Take me to my childhood, playing in the mud. Chorus. In a new space, I've been kissed by nostalgia, alone to memories of my timeless life. Verse 4. In this new space, people are just in their own space. I've lost time to laugh and play in endless space. Chorus. In a new space, I've been kissed by nostalgia, alone to memories of my timeless life. Verse 4. Welcome to my world of broken dreams I shared with timeless memories in life. Nostalgia has tied me to wonderful dreams I pinned inside. Outro. Touch me with the breeze of nostalgia. In a new space, I've been kissed by nostalgia. End poem. And what are your thoughts, Lee?
Well, I was looking at her AN, and she also wrote to that beautiful picture of the woman coming out of the sea, holding and touching the stonework. She says, write a new poem for new spaces, old feelings. And what I liked about her poem and nostalgia, it just kind of made me think that seeing that ship, maybe in her past life she had died. And, you know, she was coming to a kingdom or a castle where she once lived. You know, in verse 1, gold and silver are stored in the shelves of time. Materialism and wants are increasing crimes. You know, in her chorus, in the new space, I've been kissed by nostalgia, alone to memories, my timeless life. You know, maybe she's revisiting where she had lived as now being a water creature. And in nostalgia, nostalgia is something that you miss and you wish to revisit. And, you know, and that's what I, you know, I saw here, because she says, in this new space, in the city life, I've been cornered to the skyscrapers and the night highs. Take me to my childhood playing in the mud, you know, maybe wanting to go back to being an earth creature. But now she is a creature of the sea. And I really enjoyed this very much and nicely read.
I agree. Thank you so much, Leah. But, you know, touch me with the breeze of nostalgia, old feelings in a new space. You know, nostalgia is something that we all cherish, I think, you know, those nostalgic feelings of being a child, and, you know, just being anywhere in life where you're happy, you know, and you can reflect back on that and have a warmth come over your heart, and, you know, a feeling of peace and comfort, you know, that you find in nostalgia. It's just a wonderful right, you know. It's I enjoyed verse one. Gold and silver are stored in the shelves of time. Materialism and wants are increasing crimes. You know, that is mankind. You know, we get lost in our materialism and our wants, and we lose our nostalgia. And because they said they'd be chasing after what all the materialism in life, you know, the gold and the silver and the betterment, you know, and you lose that piece of you, that the nostalgia, you know, the innocence and the life that you once had and that brought you to who you are today. And, you know, I think that's very sad that, you know, we lose ourselves along the way. And it's a hard-hitting right, you know. It speaks to man and his moving forward and forgetting the past. And you know, she wants to hold on to that everlasting breeze of nostalgia, which I think is a beautiful, touching thing. I mean, you know, I don't want to forget, you know, those nostalgic times of my life where I had happiness and peace and fulfillment. So I thought it was a wonderful write by Jesna, and thank you for sharing, Jesna. All right, Leah, I have the next poem up. It's called Cell Stem by Liquid Mind Forever, if you wouldn't mind reading that, please.
Okay. Cell Stem? Okay. I really enjoy your title, Cell Stem, Exploring Ephrasis. And ephrasis means the use of detailed description of work, of visual art as a literary delight. So I'm really looking forward to this poem by Liquid Mind Forever, Selfstem, Exploring Ephrasis. There's a stink of hypochondria, necktied to the tree of life, a flim-flam scam trying to impress Ayn Rand with our brand of objectivism, of the farm rushing cows sown deep with tripe. We delight in the topsy-turvy kill or be killed contraband. Shall we dive into the Pradhana or fly off onto the Garuda to the Blue Mountain, be transformed and point our fingers at devilish arms while we swarm the citadel to loot and toot our horns while looking stylishly forlorn again, seek for the answers to questions that should never be tasked for arms. Is there a debonair gent underneath the rug rat who will split your throat without a blink of his crisscrossed eyes of debauchery posing for gentlemanly charm while silently storms brew beneath his cap of indifferent bloat, a warm goat who drinks his own milk playing at being his best motherly? Queens and kings will rot, and gents and maidens will stand quietly, perfecting their charm school decorum, and ask if we'll vote for them or against the upper class font of idiocy, the New World Policy. And we snicker and under our breath consider our next self-stem in poem.
Well, beautiful read, Leah. And wow, what a poem. You know, it really speaks to, the people who stay quiet while those who are in power run amok. And we delight in the topsy-turvy kill or be killed contraband strand. Shall we dive into the Pradana or fly off the Garuda to the Blue Mountain, be transformed and point our fingers at devilish harms while we swarm the citadel to loot and toot our horns while looking stylishly forlorn again, seek for the answers to questions that should never be tasked for arms. You know, when you're tasking yourself, your questions with arms, that's a bad thing. I mean, you're taking up arms as opposed to asking questions, you know. You know, and then kings and queens will riot and gents and maidens will stand quietly, perfecting their charm school decorum and ask if we'll vote for them or against the upper class font of idiocy, the New World Policy. And we snicker underneath our breath, consider our next cell stem. The cell stem kind of throws me because I keep thinking stem cell, but I enjoyed it. It was an excellent write and a fabulous read, Leah. What are your thoughts?
Mm-hmm. You know, this is a powerful write. My liquid mind forever. You know, her, you know, writing about the writer, Michael, you know, in the picture she has, he's sitting there in different views of a bolero cap and, you know, a suit and tie. And, you know, she brings that, the first thing she brings out, there's a steak of hypochondria tied to the tree of life, you know, and then, you know, she talks about the scams have been around for eons, you know, and, you know, she just describes what she sees. We delight in the topsy-turvy kill or be killed contraband strand, you know, that this is things that people believe in. You know, to be killed, you know, kill or be killed, that type of mentality, you know, what it does to civilization and humanity. You know, she talks about, you know, the citadel to loot and toot her horns while looking stylishly forlorn again, seeking for the answers to questions that should never be asked for arms, you know, man is always ready to fight, you know. And then she talks about how you think because somebody is a gent who is debonair is somebody that you can trust. You know, she says in a second, you know, underneath that rug, he'll slit your throat. So just because somebody looks like they're safe and highly educated in an expensive suit, doesn't mean that they're safe. And then, you know, she talks about, you know, his charm while silently storms through beneath his cap. Well, you know, what this person is thinking. And then she talks, like you brought out, the kings and queens riot gents, you know. You know, that has also happened through history. And, you know, these people who go through these charm schools who are used to charm people, You know, of course, you know, they smile at you with their perfect white teeth, asking you, are you going to vote for them for whatever it is that they're doing up against? But, you know, she just brings out that, you know, it's just the idiocy of how the world is run. And that she, you know, those who sit back and watch and see what's going on, You know, she brings out in the last sentence, and we snicker under our breath. Consider our next self. You know, that maybe they need a couple of new selves to understand what life is really freaking about and what the rest of society is thinking of your idiocy. Very well written. Very powerful.
Absolutely.
I enjoyed her imagery.
Absolutely. Great comment, Lee. All right, so next we have Constant Chase by Gray0328. And since it's got my name, I will give it a read. A constant chase. In moments frozen, when icy streams flow, ask me of the mistakes I've come to know. Question if my deeds define my existence, if they pave the path or cause resistance. For others in their gradual traversal have entered into my mind's dispersal. Some sought to aid, extend a caring hand, while others aim to hurt, to reprimand. Inquire about the impact they have bestowed, their boundless love, or the hate that flowed. Did their affections sculpt my destiny, or merely driftballs upon life's sea? Remember those who filled my days with light, whose love ignited my spirit's brightest height. Their warmth, a balm that healed scars within, transforming weakness into strength akin. Inquire of the hearts that harbored disdain, if their hostility left a lasting stain. Did their venom poison the hopes I held, or fortify the resistance I compelled? But as the river thaws, true wisdom's found, reflecting on the echoes all around. It's not the mistakes of love, nor the hate, that define our loves or predetermined fate. It's a journey, a constant chase, embracing errors with love we embrace. And from those trials we learn and we grow, as the river of existence continues to flow. A Constant Chase by Courtney Weaver Jr. Wow, that was deep. What are your thoughts, Leah?
What I enjoyed about Gray's poem, A Constant Chase, is that she sets us up in the first stanza where it gradually just bleeds with pain and agony and defiance. In moments frozen when icy streams flow, ask me of the mistakes I've come to know. Question if my deeds define my existence. So the things that she's doing, if they pave the path or cause resistance. And then, you know, she talks about inquire about the impact they bestowed, their boundless love, or the hate that flowed. Did their affections sculpt my destiny, or merely drift as ripples on life's sea? You know, and then she goes, you know, it just continues to go on and expand, you know, where she's been loved and then she's been hated from some. And, you know, she's questioning, is this why I am, because of these events that have happened to me in my life? Is she just drifting with love, or is she in those ripples that, you know, of resistance? And then, you know, she goes again, which I really like this, Esquire of the hearts that harbor disdain, if their hostility left a lasting stain. And, you know, there's that old saying, you know, sticks and stones may break my bones, but words may never hurt me. But that is actually, you know, your bones can heal, but the things that you've been told tend to stain you in some ways. Even as a child, even as an adult, you remember that. It is a stain. It's like a, you know, tattoo that you can't get rid of. But, you know, she goes on, did the venom poison the hope I held, or fortify the resistance I compelled? No, so she's asking of herself again, did they poison me and this is why I am? Or am I not that way because I've resisted and pushed back? Excellent, excellent poem. I'm not going to quote all the stanzas. Fabulous rhyme and imagery and learning who you are through the good and bad experiences.
Yeah, exactly. I really enjoyed those last three stanzas. Inquire of the hearts that harbored disdain if their hostility left a lasting stain. Did their venom poison the hopes I held or fortify the resistance I compelled? But as the river thaws, true wisdom's found, reflecting on echoes all around. It's not the mistakes, the love, nor the hate that define our loves or predetermined fate. For life is a journey, a constant chase, embracing errors with love we embrace. And from those trials we learn and we grow as a river of existence continues to flow. You know, it isn't one thing or another thing that makes our life what it is. It's the journey that makes it what it is. And, you know, I mean, we all make mistakes and we have to embrace that and, you know, learn from that and carry on. And whether that's with the people we choose or the decisions we make, you know, there's an ability to overcome all of that, to continue to grow and flow and continue, you know, the chase, the constant chase. It's a beautiful, deep, right? You know, it's powerful in its imagery, and it really has a good rhyme scheme to it as well. I enjoyed the rhyme scheme and the flow. But, you know, it was a beautiful, right, deep and metaphorically rich. So, well done. Thank you for sharing, Grace 0328. All right, I'm going to grab the next poem here. And this is by Jessica Wheeler. It's called Stone Eggs, and I will post this to the group. Okay, there you go.
Okay. Stone Eggs by Jessica C. Wheeler. She lives and breathes in yesterday, drenched in recollections. They exist in her yearning mind, melding with the ocean as it pulls her from today on a raft with no paddle reaching for a ship that has sailed. In ignorance, she weeps away reality, the dust never to settle in her well-kept, tidy delusion. She lingers among the broken shells, guarding what has already hatched, her stone cast eggs in one basket. End poem.
Beautiful read. That had excellent imagery. You know, it was a heartfelt rite. It's like a dreamlike quality to it that has the reader envisioning somebody who's cast all her stone or all her eggs into one basket, and among the broken shells, guarding what has already hatched, her stone cast eggs in one basket. A beautiful rite. I thought it captured the image wonderfully, and you did an excellent job of reading it, Leah. What are your thoughts?
Well, I see that a lot of poets were inspired by this image. You know, you look into the basket and there's eggs and they've turned to stone. You know, she can no longer access them. You know, and I thought that, you know, she did this beautifully in her first stanza. She lives and breathes in yesterday, you know, because you can't change yesterday, even no matter how much you want it. When you put all your eggs in a basket and hope it goes somewhere, and it doesn't. And this is what's happened to her. She's drenched in those pastimes, the recollections that exist in her yearning mind. And I like the word drenched because her cape is waterbound, like as if it's coming from the sea. I thought she beautifully did that. And, you know, then, you know, she puts, you know, which I really liked, because she's put all her eggs in a basket and it obviously didn't do anything. Melding with the ocean as she pulls her from today on a raft with no paddle reaching for a ship that has sailed. You know, that the ship has sailed. She can't do anything about it. She has no paddle. And, you know, I thought that she caught the imagery because there is a wistful sadness in her eyes. You know, she's white. Her face is white. Her hands are the color of humans. You know, so she's in both worlds now. Sea and land.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Excellent comment, Liu. And I'd like to say hi to Naomi Sarah in the group. Hello, Naomi. And thank you for your poems that you've added. Much appreciated. All right. So we have the next poem here. And this is by Esty. And it's called Define Better, quotation, probably adult quotation. Unaware of the confines of my own madness, I set forth to rid a world of abject sadness. Caught with eyes blind, I let the demons run the show, and what was my reality melted away like snow. Wandering blind, with no fear of consequence, trading anchors and chains for existence, too late to wash my hands, far too late to run. Tricked by a waxing moon in the christening robes of an infant son. Stacking precious minutes in Spartan serotonin towers, sitting back, watching them sway in countless drunken hours, as I mumbled futile pleas to a faith disavowed, the nimble fingers of fate began to weave my shroud. Faces traced in eddies, shallow and empty, periodic illusions, creeping parietal atrophy, in eternal conflict with a sinister enemy, me versus me, a rigid dichotomy. Cognitive therapy, in an analytical sense, 26 sessions, oblique and intense. Writhing cans of worms emptied on the rapist table, an illegible postscript for my own reconstruction of the fables. 1. Mirtazapine Mondays, craving the chance to be at peace with death again, like the nothing I felt before life's stilled refrain. Forbidden escapes, the unspoken taboo. Sure, I've thought about suicide. How about you? Duloxetine Tuesdays. Fuck you and your futile attempts to belong. Your puerile infatuations with the singer, but not the song. Go cry some more when it isn't what you thought. Find your tears in a Bible so easily bought. I can see the ubiquitous sham you paint on a face for the twice blind you see. None of them know. They're looking at me. I'll kill them dead and not give a damn. I'm embarrassed. You're fucking pathetic, morose, and self-indulgent, permanently static, always so weak and soap opera dramatic. 3. I won't take your stupid meds Wednesday. This chill wind whispers distance. A pregnant sun swallows air. Timeless anticipations sit still alone recumbent in these empty chairs, blind photographs capturing elusive thoughts, mumbling of when you were there, when the frozen sky shattered into infinite beads of fractured eyes, tainted with scant remorse, an insane timpani on a threadbare carpet of need, woven from distinction and a salivating mouth of greed, seeping into puddles of nothing, reflecting flutter buys and lullabies and childhood's precious lies. 4. Proxetine Thursdays. A million lifetimes in a single minute, painting a landscape without me in it. Genetic emetics. Fuck. I'm so pathetic. A homemade, self-indulgent heretic. 5. Fluxetine Fridays. I'm always so fucking heavy. Feels like the earth gives way underneath me. These hands aren't mine. Who's that talking in my ear? Did I just... Wait a minute. Can you fall upwards? All the lights have gone dim on the other side. Tired of this protracted suicide. I feel lightning in my bones. I'm surrounded by unknowns. A million lifetimes in a single minute. Painting a landscape without me in it. Blind to the darkness behind my own eyes. In pigeon-chested belligerence. Wretched to breaking point across... stretched to breaking point across angry skies. Questioning my own existence. The infinite canvas of imagination. Blotted with the careless Rorschach suggestions. Defecated from habitual rumination in the infinite silence of punitive isolation. 6. Sertraline Saturdays. Damien, are you better? Do your thoughts control the weather? Are you troubled by psychosis? Was your recent halitosis the result of some necrosis? It's a form of massive gnosis that seeps by, seeps in by osmosis, and everyone supposes that it's just a blind neurosis, Googling your self-diagnosis to fund an openly paranoid thesis. 7. Citroplam Saturdays. In the darkened corner of fraying cobalt memory, frozen behind alphabet blocks, playing Silly Boy Blue, silent in the shadows of timeless isolation, azure, dove-speckled eyes, shedding pearls of innocence. Uninvited playmates beckon with enticing new games, cold, heartless hands gripping fragile shoulders, mocking a violent, spinning, sinister ring of the roses. Brave Boy Blue knows to show no fear. In the turbulence between sterile okays is where I choose to sit with my anger, to be an eternal garden of my own malaise, heavy with self-pity, trapped in amber. I found some catharsis in the fruit of the pen, where I compared notes with the best of men, but found only growing distance in whatever I did, except for Westerbork campfires and Frisian kid. So, should you ask me if I'm better? I hope you find time to listen. End poem.
Yeah.
Well, and then he says in his author's notes, he says, oh no, I've said too much. And it says, death, sad, society, spiritual, pain, humor, adult. And it was the prompt 45. So I'm going to look at that real quick here. But what did you think of the poem, Lee?
You know, this is deeply sad, you know. The picture shows this individual that looks as if it fills nothing. And then there's two small children on the ground, like stacking up golden coins, you know. And, you know, her poems that date from Monday to Sunday, the days of the week, she has put medication, you know, inhibitors for depression, obsessive compulsive disorder, you know, those who suffer from PTSD, social anxiety and panic disorders. And I thought that she brilliantly did this. You know, sometimes they give you, you know, something sinister, an internal conflict with a sinister entity. You know, the things that she, the fears and everything and the depression and the loneliness you felt. And as she names off these different types of medicines, you know, Zoloft, you know, used for depression, sometimes one will help you with one thing, but then it causes other issues or hasn't helped with the original one. So, you know, there's the doctor, you know, to me, giving you another pill to try and help you adjust. But, you know, I don't, she says, I can see the ubiquitous sham you paint on your face, the twice blind to see. None of them know of them. They're looking at me. I'd kill them dead and not give a damn. You know, where you just, you know, come, everything in your life is where you don't feel nothing. And, you know, she knows that you're looking at them, but she also knows what you're doing. Because for some reason, this poem made me think the person has experienced horrific pain and agony. And sometimes when that happens, they become, you know, more sensitive or like empathic, you know, and, you know, where your mind constantly talks to you and just doesn't shut up. You know, those thoughts that she says, blind photographs capturing elusive thoughts, mumbling. And then somewhere in here, she talked about greed and, you know, where she says, woven from distinction and the salivating mouth of greed, you know, the greediness of people and also the, you know, sometimes the greediness of the medical community where they just want to keep giving you pills to just, you know, shut you up because they don't want to listen to what you've experienced in your pain, seeped into the puddles of nothing when you get nothing. Your childhood's precious lies, you know, they're destroyed, and she just keeps going into the next day, you know, fuck, you know, she's feeling it. I'm so pathetic, you know, and she talks about suicide and rape and, you know, the voices that she hears and feeling that if she is someplace else, which I don't know if this is even the side effect possibly of the medication, you know, and then she goes, or in Saturday, Damien, are you better? Do your thoughts control the weather? You know, do I feel better? Are you still troubled by psychosis? Was your recent halitosis the result of some necrosis? It's a form of mass hypnosis that seeps in by osmosis, and everyone supposes that is just a blind neurosis, where they categorize you, grueling yourself with self-diagnosis to fund an openly paranoid thesis. You know, the study papers that they write on people with depression and other mental illnesses. And she talks about the next medicine, which I don't know if they're just giving them, you know, medicine after medicine because they can't figure out how to help her deal with these issues that she's dealing with. You know, it's hurtful. To me, this is somebody who's lonely, that, you know, people with mental diseases, people don't want to be around. They tend to cut them out of their lives. They're not paid attention to, and they become very lonely. And she said, should you ask me, in her couplet at the end, if I'm better, I hope you find time to listen. And, you know, to heal and take medication, which is, you know, they're trying to help. There's nothing wrong with that, but you need to listen to what I have to say for why I am this way. Excellent poem, Eske.
Absolutely. And I really enjoyed it, the title, Define Better. You know, that really says it all right there, you know, Define Better. Am I better? You know, not really. I mean, you know, I'm still all fucked up in the head. And, you know, all these medicines on each different day, Tizapin Mondays, Lexapine Tuesdays, won't take your stupid meds Wednesdays, Paroxetine Thursdays, and then Sertraline Saturdays. You know, like you said, those are all mental health meds, I believe. And, you know, it's a very astute poem. You know, it seems like she knows where this is coming from. And I don't know whether, you know, she suffers some sort of mental illness herself, but if she doesn't, she really, really has a grasp on what mental illness is and how it affects people in the world around them. Wandering blindly with no fear of consequence, creating anchors and chains for an existence, too late to wash my hands, far too late to run, tricked by a waxing moon and the christening robes of an infant son. I mean, that's just excellent right there. And the whole poem is just a powerful poem on mental illness and all that it entails. You know, a million lifetimes in a single minute, painting a landscape without me in it. You know, some people feel that the world is just blazing on, and they're not in it because, you know, they're in their own head. And, you know, they're missing out on life as it goes. So, it's a very hard-hitting, very real poem. So should I ask you if I'm better? I hope you find time to listen. You know, I mean, that kind of says it all about mental illness right there. You know, most people don't have the time and they won't listen because they won't give you the time of day to listen. And like you said, you know, you're cut out of people's lives because of your mental illness. And what it does to you and the world around you when, you know, you're suffering through this mental illness. So I thought it was a fantastic write, very hard-hitting, very emotional, and a deeply powerful write. So, Eske, thank you for sharing. It was brilliant. Thank you so much. And so I have When Winter Bows to Gracious May by Captain Kerr, if you would mind, Lee, please.
Mm-hmm. When Winter Bows to Gracious May by Captain Kerr. When winter bows to gracious May and warm spring winds blow from afar, a lady waits through seasons stray, redeemed by beauty close and far. Beneath clouds that graze and glower, buds on earth that yearn to flower and break the bonds of stifling ice. I breathe the climes, I drink the day, to love her always from afar, a sun that sends a distant ray in spectral white without mar, that breaches every unclaimed hour, bells that toll from golden tower to count the blessings in her eyes. The stage is set, new scenes to play, to touch a heart and mount a star. On the hollow mountain of red clay, and from this height I've reached afar, revealing in morning shower, scripting acts of death and power, raining down from determined skies. Linear bars comprise a stave. I hear a flute in solo lyre,
soft notes that swept and drift away and wafts in sweetness from afar. Inlaid weaves of gold I suffer, behind I stand her secret lover, terminus dreams to yet realize. I delight to decorous May, through frost weaves a hazardous scar. A seedling must patiently wait beneath thick compost black as tar, shaded by a slender bower, then a bloom a small fragrant flower, redder than rose, bluer than sky. I will host hot sweltering day and serve a cold demissive star. I cannot leave or turn away. Though love may reckon from afar, I know a dam of unknown hour. I will break the gray, strike the tower, and I will soothe her troubled eye. Today she thought that I might stay to provide comfort in my arms, but so much more I'd wish she'd say and not reopen every scar. She will grace the seat of power and will wed that faceless tower. Every toll I am denied. My heart remains in her power and drinks to pain with grapes that sour. I watch the gadflies bite and die. End poem.
Well, what a fantastic read, Lee. And what a fantastic poem as well. You know, it really is deep. It's when winter bows to a gracious May. And the whole poem is just rich in its texture and its meaning. I breathe the climes, I drink the day to love her always from afar, a sun that sends a distinct ray in spectral white, a mar that breaches every unclaimed hour, bells that toll from golden tower to count the blessings in her eyes. That's just beautiful right there. And, you know, the whole poem is stunning throughout. But my heart remains in her power and drinks to pain with grapes that sour. I watch the gadflies bite and die. I'm not too sure what a gadfly is, but I'm sure it's got something to do with May. And it was written to prompt 5 of the contest, so I'm going to check that out real quick here.
Yeah, the picture's on the, it's on the poem, Greg.
Oh, okay. Right. Wow. you know, she really captures the essence of the write quite beautifully. I mean, of the art work quite beautifully. You know, it's When Winter Bows to Gracious May. Wow, what a title. And then, you know, I delight in decorous May through though frost weaves a hazardous scar, a seedling must patiently wait beneath thick compost black as tar, shaded by a slender bower, then bloom a small fragrant flower, redder than rose, bluer than sky. I mean, that's incredible imagery there. And the next stanza, I will host hot sweltering day and serve a cold dismissive star. I cannot leave or turn away, though love may beckon from afar. I know a dawn of an unknown hour will break through gray, strike the tower, and I will soothe her troubled eyes. Amazing. Amazing write and a fabulous read, Lee. What are your thoughts?
I thought this was beautifully penned. The classical poetry is just gorgeous, as well as the creative imagery. You know, he talks about how the stage is set, new scenes to play, it to touch a heart and mount a star. You know, it sounds as if her life is already predetermined, that she brings the, you know, the different seasons of the change, and that she is to wed, you know, where is it? She says that she's to wed something in the tower, I believe. She will grace the seat of power and will wed that faceless tower with every toll I am denied. You know, and then she talks about, you know, the person that is caring for her until this happens. And his mind, it looks like a rolled scroll of, you know, realizing what he is supposed to do, the things that she has told him, and hopefully, you know, because he's in love with her and he knows that he cannot be with her. You know, so the wine is, you know, bitter, and, you know, he realizes that his dreams are not to be with her, that her life is destined for something else, which, you know, this has been told many times in different storytelling of those that take care of somebody of royal lineage, of blue blood, that they have to marry whomever they are told they have to marry. And then, you know, he says right here, my heart remains in her power, in the love that he has for her, you know, that he knows that with every toll that he is denied, you know, and drinks to pain with grapes that sour, you know. You can be drinking a delicious, fragrant, fruity wine, but knowing that she will have to leave him, it just tastes sour. And so this is, you know, a sad love story, very painful and beautifully penned.
Absolutely. Great comment, Nia. All right. So I've got the next write-up. This is by Naomi Sarah, and it's called Tomorrow in a Month, in a Year. I was 20 and soon 30. The 40s followed, and also the 50s, with a few units to disrupt the counts. I read magazines that talked about my wrinkles, of butchers who mm-hmm. cut into my guts and reassembled breasts mm-hmm. in a row like cars in a factory. Staying young, no matter what the price, information, intoxication, even Botox, I say stop. Go back in time to be 20 years old again? What's wrong with that? You know what? I don't have the time. Tomorrow, in a month, in a year, I'll go for a walk, not far from the beach, and I'll pick up rounded pebbles that I will color in rainbows of happiness. Tomorrow, in a month, in a year, I will have the cuddly arms of my grandchildren wrapped around my neck to better protect me. My children will be there with me laughing, happy to have been able to cross without sinking the storms, the shipwrecks. Tomorrow, in a month, in a year, I will go out at night, all the owls, see the sunrise over the sea, walk for a long time, tasting the silence, loving the smells of moss in autumn and the hay in summer, and the song of crackling fireplaces in winter. Tomorrow, in a month, in a year, if death comes, because she always does, that bitch, she will find me standing strong, smiling and wrinkled, and foam. What are your thoughts, Lee?
I have got to say, I love this poem that Naomi is to be accepting of herself. Everything is telling us to go back and have our face pulled. I mean, I cannot see a world of cat women. They've got their faces so pulled back that their eyes are slanted. Their face doesn't move. And the amount of money in penis surgeries that you have to go to get rid of your wrinkles, your boobs lifted, your butt lifted, your gut lifted. But, you know, we forget. Those wrinkles are laugh lines and cry lines of happiness and agony. those stretch marks are babies that grew beneath your heart. You know, you can stretch your body as far back as you want to, but you cannot stop the aging because you keep aging inside. You know, and people have forgotten, you know. Tomorrow in a month, in a year, I'll go for a walk not far from the beach. I'll pick up round pebbles that will color in rainbows of happiness. Just enjoying simplicities of life. And then she goes into the next stanza and she expands it there. Tomorrow in a month, in a year, I will have the cuddly arms of my grandchildren wrapped around my neck to protect me better. It's love. It's the growing of life and how we got there. And then, you know, of course, you know, we go through all the seasons. Age does not matter when you're going to die. You can die due to unforeseen circumstances anytime as a child, a baby, a teen, a young adult, a mother in their 40s, you know, the mid-50s, 60s. I could just go on and on. Anytime an accident can happen, unforeseen circumstances with health, you know, not seen. But then she ends it fabulously, and it just made me giggle because I could just hear Naomi reading this in my head, and I could hear her laughing afterwards. Tomorrow, in a month, in a year, if death comes, because she always does, that's just, you know, nature, the bitch, because we never want to leave our loved ones. She will find me standing strong, smiling in wrinkles, and the most beautiful face is a woman who does not pretend not who she is, but who loves and accepts herself, and that others accept her for herself. Bravo, Naomi. I love this. I love it, love it, love it.
Yeah, I agree wholeheartedly. You know, I really like that opening stanza. I was 20 and soon 30. The 40s followed, and also the 50s, with a few units to disrupt the counts. And then, you know, I really like the way she goes through it with, I read magazines that talked about my wrinkles of butchers who'd cut into my guts and reassembled breasts in new car in a row, like cars in a factory. You know, staying young no matter what the price, information, intoxication, even Botox. I say stop. Go back in time. Be 20 years again? What's wrong with that? You know what? I don't have the time. I enjoyed that a lot. You know, it's like in your face to trying to be 20 again when you're actually 50. You know, and so many people suffer that, you know, they put themselves through hell trying to recreate who they once were or, you know, who they once wanted to be. And, you know, they just destroy themselves. I mean, I've seen people that are so plastic surgeries. Yeah, I mean, it's just horrific. They turn into monsters, you know. It's scary how much people will try to seek that fountain of youth through surgery, you know, and what the results are just tragic and devastating, quite honestly. It's heart-wrenching for sure. But I really enjoyed her, you know, in your face against death. You know, I'm still here standing and I'm wrinkled, but, you know, I'm here and fuck you, you know.
Yeah, accept me
so,
who I am.
Exactly.
Accept me who I am.
Exactly. Yeah, no kidding. Gray hair and all. Right, do you?
Gray for you, silver for me, boy.
Right, exactly. Silver's beautiful. You know, it says you've mm-hmm. outlasted, you know, the color of your hair, which is a beautiful thing. So I think it's wonderful. So celebrate your silver hair and rock on. Great write, Naomi, and excellent read as well. All right, so we got one by Tamri here, and I'll put this up to the group. All right. Did you read that one? Yeah, you read it, right?
There's only two of us. You can't remember? You just told me great reading.
Well, you know, I'm having a blonde moment, sorry to say. I was born blonde, but my hair turned brown. So, all right,
yeah, well.
Tamri. Yeah, well, what? All right, so we have time.
It's that gray hair, gray.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, you have plenty of time. It's 20 minutes till the end of the show.
Yeah, Time and Sand by Tamri. Time and sand, weeping from my pores, crawling across trash bins, is a universe unveiling. I push my way through glaciers of Himalayan salt, scented with rose syrup. It cuts, scrapes, and stings. Dead flesh flutters to the ground, revealing the parchment beneath. I write 1,000 years and a day, each meaningless word, a brew of poison in the waves. Cockroaches fell from the ceiling because they were rain the clouds refused to hold. Ancient creations birthed from armadillo pottery wrapped in lambskin. The sand in the box has legs and hisses, scurrying to a celebration. A flood, a second coming of sexuality and blood repressed. The future is the image at the edge of puddles, tainted by the slant of the lens. The gold coins held beneath the chin of chameleons. And there I am, drowning slowly in the middle of somebody else's nowhere. The voiceless screams knocking the wheels loose on a highway, snaked in lost phlegm and foam. And she says in her author's note, she says, I can't live through each slow century of her moving and then feel the good, cold, stinging blood, the smooth hissing snakes of rain. Wow. What are your thoughts, Leah?
Well, you know, Pam just smacks you with imagery in your face, and there's just natural reactions to the imagery and the creativeness of her writing of this poem. Ray, why don't you comment, and I'll try and comment after you.
Okay. All right. I'm just going to finish up my comment to her. All right. So I said, OMFG, you rock. And then heart eyes. This write is intense. You know, it really is powerful from start to finish. You know, it really captures that image, like, with to no other end. You know, it's time and sand weeping from my pores, crawling across trash bins is a universe unveiling. I push my way through glaciers of Himalayan salt, scented with rose syrup. It cuts, scrapes, and stings. Dead flesh flutters to the ground. I'm not going to read the whole thing, but I could. I could easily read it again because it's so intense and so awe-inspiring, quite honestly. You know, like cockroaches fell from the ceiling because they were rain. The clouds refused to hold. I mean, that's just incredible. And then the sand in the box has legs and hisses, scurrying to a celebration, a flood, a second coming of sexuality and blood repressed. Like, oh, I'm effing G, Pam. You rock. You really hit the nail on the head with this one. And I thought it was a brilliant write and fantastic read. Wow.
Mm-hmm.
great job, baby camp. And Lily, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I agree. I don't know how much I can talk, but, you know, her descriptions. I don't know if I can talk, but, you know, I just like, you know, she starts off and, you know, I see the time sen weeping from my pores, you know, and, you know, she, and then here I push my way through glaciers of Himalayan salt, scented with rose, you know, rose syrup. You know, you just smell that and see that, you know, Himalayan salt, you know, the pink crystal-like. And then I just, you know, the flesh started flowing to the ground and I went, ew. And then she starts talking about cockroaches. Okay, that is just something. I hate cockroaches. I detest them. But, you know, she goes, they fall from the ceiling. And, you know, you can just hear their nails. And
hello to you. Unmute the ear. I think we've lost Lydia. All right. So I posted the next, right? And this is by Jody Melton. It's called Memories in the Wild. In autumn's gentle whisper, your energy softly flows, a fragrant messenger bringing to me a breath of release I didn't know. With every crisp and golden breeze flowing friskly through the trees, the smell of burning embers awakens in me. For your touch, I believe, a sense of warmth in the stillness of your embrace, longing to once again see the smile on your face. The scent of fallen leaves and the crackle of broken wood, a symphony so sweet, a promised word to meet again, if only we could. The wind, a charmer, carrying memories of you and I, hearts and moments became a rustling lullaby. When scarlet leaves cascade to earth and skies are painted gold, the air in autumn bears your love, a tale forever told. In every breath I feel you near, your essence does unfold, and with each gust my soul's aflame by love's story retold. So let the winds of autumn sing and whisper in my ear, for in their notes I find your love ever strong and clear. With every inhale of this season, so precious and so whole, the air in autumn brings your love directly to my soul. End poem. Well, that was beautiful. Right from the start, you know, in autumn's gentle whisper, your energy softly flows, a fragrant messenger bringing to me a breath of release I didn't know. Wow, incredible. Incredible, right? You know, you can feel the passion in it. And it's just wonderful. We have a caller here. I'm going to bring this caller on. Hello,
oh, my God, great. It's my telephone. I had to call back. It dropped me.
Oh, okay. It still shows you on here. I've got two of your numbers.
I know. There's two of me now, and I'm not a Gemini.
Wow. Yeah. But that was a beautiful poem. Did you get to hear it by
no,
Jody Melton?
I didn't, but yes. He is a fabulous writer. Mhm. Can you hear me?
Yep.
Okay. He's a fabulous writer. I read him the other day in a collaboration, and I think it was with Naomi. And, I love the way he describes here,
An honest, gentle whisper, your energy softly flows, a fragrant messenger. Bring it to me. A breath of release I didn't know. You know, nature to me is healing. And then he goes on to describe, which I love, crisp and golden breeze blowing friskly through the leaves. There's nothing like sitting there or walking and listening to how the wind moves and makes the leaves dance and the sound that they make. Each tree and each different type of tree makes a different sound. And he says, the smell of burning embers awakens in me for your touch. Oh, that is so passionate. And I'm going to stop there because I'm going to start coughing.
Okay. Yeah, I enjoyed the write throughout. You can feel the passion, the desire, the love that he has for this person that Autumn so reminds him of. The wind charmer was his prompt, which is prompt 43. I'm just going to take a quick look at it here because I'm curious. Oh, okay. Wow. Yeah, it's somebody playing a flute on the hillside with no body, just the upper half of a body, and the lower half is a dress that's open to the wind. And then somebody with long hair playing a pan flute beside her. And, I mean, you know, to get that right out of that image is just spectacular. I mean, you did an excellent job, Joey. You know, you really have a talent for your ability to pen. Thank you so much for pointing that out to us, Naomi. Much appreciated. So let the winds of autumn sing and whisper in my ear, for in their notes I find your love ever strong and clear. With every inhale of this season, so precious and so whole, the air in autumn brings your love directly to my soul. Just amazing writer. I've never heard of him, but I think I'm going to follow him right now just because you know, I enjoyed that. It was a talented writer.
Yeah.
And he's a home improvement business, so great. Sorry.
Just go ahead. I loved it, the photograph, you know, that she's standing at a cliff and, you know, there's no legs or thighs to her, you know. So I can imagine that she's some type of spirit. And he says, hear the wind, a charmer carrying memories of you and I. Hearts and moments become a rustling lullaby. And I just thought that imagery was just outstanding. It's beautiful. He continues to talk about, in every breath I feel you near, your essence does unfold, and with each gust my soul aflame, my love story retold. You know, this story of love that never ends, and that comes, the air and autumn brings your love directly to my soul. So, you know, it's just breathtakingly beautiful.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree wholeheartedly. And, so we have 5 minutes left. I don't know what we should do here.
Did you read the introduction that Bobby left?
No.
I sent you a text. Yeah, Bobby wrote that tonight, astonishingly, we continue our incredible record of having absolutely no carryovers from the previous Saturday night program, where wonders never cease. And now our entry for the program contest, Too Much of a Good Thing, The Eternal Absurdity of Michael Chevelle, Part 2. And wow, she really had some fabulous rights to all that imagery. And you can dig out a poem, Greg.
Sorry?
You can put a poem up if you want to. We still have 5 minutes.
Okay, I will. Let me see here. Okay, I'm going to put up this one here. It's a little bit saucy for tonight, but that's okay. And this is called Her House of Pleasure and Pain. The confusion sets in as the day goes down and the night starts. I feel her power in the beating of our hearts. My head spins round like a leaf on the breeze. You twist my mind and the elation begins. I'm strung out on you and all that you do. How is it that you have this power over me, rattling my cage? I'm begging to be set free, released into your ecstasy. With lips so red, you call me to bed. In a crimson dress, I see you move, you shaking your hips as your hair cascades down your cheeks, framing those pouty lips. Hearts are broken and minds are blown. Your allure is intoxicating. I slip under your spell, a mixture of heaven and hell, reminiscent of Jezebel, yet an angel from above. I am lost in you. How is it that you have this power over me, wrapping your cage around me, yet setting me free? I worship in your house. You are winning this game. How is it you have this power over me, again and again? I am here to serve in your house of pleasure and pain. Oh, I can't sleep or eat, but I'll be fine, drowning in your erotic ecstasy. How is it you have this power over me, again and again? I am here to serve in your house of pleasure and pain. How is it you have this power over me, again and again? I am here to serve in your house of pleasure and pain. End poem.
Yeah. Yeah, what a way to end. A contest with beautiful art. I'm going to read my comment that I had written. Deeply sensual and wonderfully erotic song lyrics of delicious enchantment. I love the closing stanzas, erotic imagery with the repetitive song lines. You have a natural way of sensual expressions. Laugh out loud. Muy caliente. I'd love this. How is it that you have the power over me, rattling my cage? I'm begging to be set free. Those lips so red, you call me to. And so now we would like to hear you comment on your poem. What did you write this to? And I see it was possible, The Art of Seduction.
Yeah, I read it. I wrote it to a woman with wonderful red lipstick on and a hot and sexy mouth, as captured in the picture. So yeah, cheers.
Well, that was a great show, Gray. I want to thank Bobby for running these excellent contests that inspire rights of every various sort. It was enjoyable. I can't believe the 2 hours went that fast. So thank you, Bobby, and thank you, Gray.
Absolutely. Good night, Leah.
Good night, Gray. And good night, everybody. Love
good
you
night,
guys.
Will.
Come see me on Monday with Gray and Lee.
Yeah.
And Front Page Picks with Frank and Weaver and Open Poetry. So come on over and have some fun with us with excellent poetry.
Good night.
Good night.